John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand. You can follow me on Twitter at John, J-O-N, the Cubs fan, but White Sox fans are welcome too. We're going to launch this Friday edition of the Wintrust Business Lunch with Andrea Haines, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. And Andrea, always good to see you.
You too. Fun to see you, John.
So this story that we're going to start with is dividing my brain into two different parts, my opinion on this matter. We're talking about body cameras, which I think we're all used to on police, but the idea of expanding that to maybe municipal workers and adding AI technology. And before we get into it, I just want to invite people, 312-981-7200, text on in your opinion on this, because this really does freak me out, but it's supposedly for a good reason, right, Andrea?
It's always a good reason when it's in development, right? The ultimate use we'll figure out down the line, right? But that's how it's sort of being cast now. So this is Motorola Solutions teaming up with a Boston-based company to basically use artificial intelligence within these sort of emergency devices that Motorola makes, including body cameras.
Mm-hmm.
So this would potentially allow, and this is all in the example stage, right? Like actual cities would have to decide whether to use it and how to use it and all those things. But what it would potentially do is allow you to say a child is missing, a suspect is on
like
the list.
Like an Amber Alert goes out or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. You can like activate your force, whatever that force is, of people to have these cameras on. They're scanning a crowd, and right there in the field, it's scanning and labeling these individuals.
So it's real time, because right now, let's say you want to find a suspect and you've got video. I mean, we have video cameras everywhere, but you literally have to roll back the tape and look for it. So this kind of cuts out that process.
It's a much more human-centered process than it potentially would be, where right from the field, it would be scanning. I mean, the example they show, and there we have a video on the story, but you can see it's labeling people as person, like meaning normal person, not who we're looking for. But then if it scans what it matches to be the person, it labels that person. It's truly futuristic looking in a way that not everything we talk about week to week is.
The headline mentions, and I imagine they're promoting this too, that obviously it can help find missing children, let's say. And do not get me wrong, that it must be one of the most frightening experiences to go through. But in the longer, I mean, it's a pretty rare thing for kids to go missing, especially stolen by a stranger or something along those lines. It's obviously a very important thing to deal with. Have you heard, I mean, when you read this, did you get any weird sensations? Because I kind of immediately went, this seems like a step too far.
Well, I lost my mind a little bit, maybe because I'm super interested in crime type stories. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm all the Columbo, the Law and Order. And this is just so, it speaks to that. Because when you're imagining law enforcement having this in their hands, and not just law enforcement, but just this technology existing, it's literally like something you would see in a movie. And you imagine the labels, which are, of course, harmless in the demonstrations, but you can imagine other usages of those. It kind of blows your mind to just think of us all being immediately sort of scanned. And again, it's not personal information
right.
that they're talking about. They're not saying
it's not Minority
Andrea
Report
and
where
she,
it, yes.
whatever. It's more like, but even the fact that it could pick you out of a crowd.
Right.
is something new to think about.
And with all these things, it starts out A-okay for a good reason, then you start to develop other reasons for it. So let's move on to talking about Syria. This is an odd transition, but I mean, you've got nearly 500,000 people that have been killed in the Syrian civil war that's going on, a lot of people along the Turkish border as refugees. The last thing I would think that these poor people need is training on entrepreneurship.
Yeah, it's a little jarring if you're just thinking about it from that level. And I agree that you kind of go like, really? Is like marketing services
mm-hmm.
really what the people in Syria most need right now?
Right.
Like, but when you start, I mean, again, we start to, I think we almost dehumanize people that are in these kind of situations. And it's like when you think about these conflict zones, of course, there are a lot of people that do a lot of work in conflict zones, and people need to make a living now. They will need to make a living in the future. There's still teenagers growing up and people with ideas. So there is someone from the Polsky Center at the University of Chicago.
Steve Lehman. Yeah.
Steve Lehman, who is, you know, heading to a Turkish border town. It's less than 2 hours from Aleppo, and almost is running what you'd think of as like a Techstars kind of thing, or a, you know, a little boot camp for budding entrepreneurs.
Well, it's interesting because obviously they need medicine, they need help, and so, but they need to make money too. And entrepreneurship is actually one of the things that is still left. It's on a very small scale. You have women making jewelry, you have things along those lines. So you do kind of have a budding entrepreneurship ability there. You just kind of got to give them the tools, at least probably some of the people the tools to be able to expand and move and sell more.
Yeah. And I think, you know, when you think of it as a small business, maybe it makes more sense. When we think of startups the way we think of them, there's probably some, let's say, less than necessary startup services that might not be what's most needed there right now.
Right.
But when you think of individuals needing to make a living, needing to understand business and develop small businesses, it makes sense.
Any help we can give them is A-OK in
absolutely.
My book.
And this seems to me like somebody who's taking what he knows and trying to leverage it in a way that helps.
Andrea Haynes, Google Glass is back, but just for the business, right?
Yeah, so now you might be seeing Google Glass in your work instead of on the street. So they had, as you know, these funny-looking devices that everyone loved to hate that they wanted to sell to consumers for $1,700. No, right? So they went quiet for a while. We haven't heard too much about them. But now we're hearing a little bit more again where it's coming back in the workplace.
Okay. And what uses would someone have for Google Glass in the workplace?
So there's things like surgery, I think, is kind of a fascinating use
well,
of it.
Or sense.
Things where you could imagine just having that embedded set of eyes, that embedded set of video can have uses. Some of the industries that they mention also include law enforcement, military, healthcare, sports, theme parks, and theater.
I would like to see what a fastball looks like coming at 101 miles an hour if they could somehow broadcast from Google Glass what that looks like. However, I would hate for a business for Bill to spy on Joe and see how much unproductive he is in the workplace and see what it is. So they are available for businesses now? Or
yes, so businesses are using them.
Do they look any better? Because they look kind of weird
at first. They're designed a little bit differently. And I think there are more where you can wear them on safety goggles, for example. So like you could be using them in a factory.
That makes sense.
That kind of thing. So you might be seeing them in the workplace.
The ability to see through someone else's eyes could certainly be helpful for businesses and people alike. I expect that in 20, 30 years, we'll all be wearing Google glasses and finding criminals at the same time.
Yep.
Andrea Haynes, the editor of Blue Sky Innovation. And where can we find you on Twitter and all your work that you do?
Yeah, so I'm at Andrea Haynes, and we're at Chicago Blue Sky. And the content is at Blue Sky. Innovation.com.
John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Talking with Tom Gimbel, the CEO of Vassal Network. We're going to be talking about Google Hire, Tom. But I got to ask you one question before we jump into that. So I often hear commercials for services that help you hire. We have a lot of advertisers here that do that. And I know there's big hiring companies out there that help you find people. But as a boss, every time I hear one of those commercials as an employee, I think, pity you. Sorry, it's so hard to find people.
Right.
It's so hard. There's so many of us out there looking for gigs at some point. But tell us, is it really that hard to find good talent?
No, it's hard to find the right talent for the right company for the right position. The people are out there and the good works, but it really is the analogies to dating are the same. Is it hard to find a single guy or girl? No. Is it hard to find one you want to spend all your time with? Yes. And that's really the difference.
And making the wrong decision, much like in relationships, sets you back money and it sets you back time.
It sets you back time. All of a sudden, you're 38 years old. You've been in a dead-end relationship for 8 years and you're alone, right? And all of a
you
sudden...
You speak as if this is personally true for you. This is not, right?
Hey, I've got three kids. I'm doing all right. So, but I think there is that aspect of how you view people, what you want your culture to be, and there is a difference between doing the nuts and bolts of the job and seamlessly working together with, it's kind of like the sports analogies and the dating analogies are true. It's a sports team that has, you can hire great people, but if they don't mesh together from the personalities, you may only be getting 70, 80% efficiency from your group.
Right. So we've laid the foundation for this conversation that leads us into Google Hire.
Yep.
Tell us about what this is. It seems fairly simple to me. They've already integrated one more aspect of our lives, the employment aspect of it, into how they operate.
I think, I'm not as familiar, into the minutiae of it yet, but the ability to track candidates into your Google calendar and to have it all tracked in for seamlessly for corporations to make sure they're finding people and putting them into slots. But it doesn't take away from the people aspect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? A computer isn't interviewing you to say you'd be a great radio host.
Right.
Right? What it does is it can the algorithms and such, it can go ahead and say this is a profile that can do this job. Right.
So do you upload, and if you don't know all the details, that's fine. Would you upload information of what job you're looking for? It doesn't check our search history and try and come up with.
From what I understand, John, it's more on the reverse side.
Okay.
It's for the corporation to find people and find resumes and integrate that into the Google Calendar. It's really almost an organizational process, almost an applicant tracking system, I think, on the corporate side. And I think you can put your profile in. But it's not – I remember 20 years ago they said that Career Builder and Monster would put recruiting firms like mine out of business.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't. What they did was they killed the newspaper business because all of their profits came from classified ads.
Mm-hmm.
And now what this is going to do, it's going to cannibalize a little bit. Where does LinkedIn start and stop, right? Let's not forget Microsoft bought LinkedIn.
Right.
Google didn't buy anything. Google created it, right? And now where the candidates go. How many people use GChat, right, versus mm-hmm. texting? It's out there. People are doing it, but it's not as big as texting.
Right. It's still the primary mode of Yeah,
exactly right. So everything isn't that way. There's still, whatever, a billion people on Facebook, but everybody doesn't communicate with each other via Facebook.
Right.
They text and they email.
Mm-hmm.
This is one aspect. It isn't going to change the world, and it's still a people business to get a job.
You're part of a company that has a lot of millennials. We've talked about that before. I think this really fits in nicely with what millennials are doing. I can't think of someone under the age of 33, say, all my friends, we all have Google accounts or already built into that system. Maybe you start to get to 40 and older, maybe you have people with different accounts. Do you see this as that's a nice way in for them, that they already have this list of people? Or again, is it more than that?
I think that's really part of it, that most people have a Gmail account. But we're also into a world of one life meshing together, meaning it's not work-life balance, it's work-life meshing. And more people are still using a work email for a lot of their personal stuff, that it's all in mm-hmm. one. So I'm not a believer that it's going to change the world, that everybody's going to go to Google to find jobs, because
right.
Facebook's trying to do it too.
Right.
Right?
And you mentioned the human element. That is still always going to be, you know, I would still rather trust a personal recommendation or someone I know that is vetted or something along those lines than a computer telling me that. I imagine a lot of employers will feel the same way.
Everybody is not finding their significant other on Match.com.
A lot of people are, though.
A lot of people are.
Well, they're using Bumble. They're using Tinder. Or getting someone drunk at a bar, the old-fashioned way.
And your point, though, is well said. You just named off four different dating apps.
Mm-hmm.
Google will not take over the world.
Right.
Right? This is still, people still want referrals internally of people they know, and people, quite frankly, who are vetted beyond the algorithm.
It's an interesting discussion. Tom Gimbel, I'm sure we had to cut it short.
Nope.
You're the CEO of LaSalle Network. We can find you on Twitter, right?
Yep. You can get me at Tom Gimbel, and you can find the company at LaSalle Network.
You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. John Hanson in for Steve Bertrand, and I'm joined by Bill Hanna right now. He's the president and CEO of Northwest Indiana Regional Development Authority. That is a mouthful. Is that on your business card there, Bill, the whole thing?
Just a bunch of letters.
No one knows exactly what they mean. But no, you guys are doing a lot of great work in Northwest Indiana. I got to start, though. We've been, you know, for years we've been inundated with commercials, advertising, you know, come to Indiana, do your business in Indiana. It's better than Illinois. Here's the reason why. Even some slight pokes at the government situation. You guys are striving to maybe take a different tone now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, these things evolve over time. And we've had the last three governors have been, starting with Mitch Daniels and then Mike Pence, who's now vice president, and our current governor, Eric Holcomb. There's a lot of parallels with the change in how you do economic development. So, you know, you deal with the fiscal issues and strengthen your state in that way. You have this open, broader competition, which you'll still see in some respects where you're fighting for business and trying to brand your state, really. But now with our governor being a younger person and things evolving in terms of economic development being more about talent attraction, population regrowth and quality of place features that we work on, you know, we're part of this market. We love Chicago. We love being a part of Chicago. Born and raised in this area, and we feel proud about that. It's one of the great cities in the world. So we're looking at this as a true partnership and, you know, rooting for the city and wanting to come alongside as a partner.
If I understand, you've brought a lot of businesses over, but now an effort is being made not only about bringing more businesses over, but getting people to live in Northwest Indiana as a, I hate using this term, the millennial. I'm barely a millennial, but technically I still am. You know, 5 years ago I'd asked my friends, and I don't think any one of them lived in Northwest Indiana. That number has grown. I think people have realized they can get a lot of bang for their buck if they're looking to buy. Is that an aspect you're looking to, I guess, improve the living situation? I mean, there's got to be different ways that you guys are attacking that problem.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we have a mix that a lot of people aren't aware of in terms of different kinds of real estate options. So you have the more rural sort of setting that you can get an hour from here, lakeshore, properties up on the lake that, you know, remind me of the Hamptons, you know, maybe years ago. It's evolving into a high-end area. You have urban redevelopment zones that look a little bit more like Bronzeville or Wicker Park might have 10 years ago. With opportunities there, and we're anchoring all of this on the train improvements that we're making. So yeah, we're beefing up the current South Shore train, we're adding a track and reducing time to market drastically, and we're also adding a brand new train line that runs into South Lake County along the parallels the border and adds another 9 miles. So there'll be 9 stations all told, all reduced time, modern stations. We're doing the development around each station, and it gets to what you're talking about. So we've done about $1 billion, mostly in shoreline restoration work. We're going to do another 2.3 roughly in improvements around these station areas as well, along with investing almost $1 billion in the train itself.
As more and more people choose to live in the city of Chicago, one of the reasons they do, especially millennials, is they're ditching their cars. So I imagine the train transportation to and from Chicago and throughout the area is very important. I want to ask you about Gary Airport.
Yeah.
I drive by it plenty of times when I'm passing through the area. I don't know exactly how many commercial flights are going in and out of there. Is passenger travel to Gary Airport on your guys' agenda, or at least an increase of it?
Yeah, I mean, you want to see an increase, of course. I think the focus in a lot of ways is to really solidify that facility as a true third airport in Chicago and do a lot of business traffic as well. So Boeing is there now. And if you think about Teterboro in New York, mm-hmm. With JFK in Newark, that's a great kind of a model to look at, where there's still a mix there, but largely they're focused on that corporate carrier, and it's easy for business to get in and out of Gary.
We're talking about living in Indiana, but let's go to the business, some of the successful things you've done. Why do you think that you've been able to, I don't want to say poach companies, but attract companies to Northwest Indiana?
Yeah, well, you know, when we started here, we're talking about the evolution of, you know, finance and state government. One of the most important things about it, so we've had succession with these three governors now, and they're evolving with the market, and they're continuing to focus. The General Assembly has come alongside with them, and probably one of the most important things that has happened is that they put a cap on property tax. And they not
a
only,
cap on what is that? On property tax?
Yeah, right. 1-3% each year. It's one for residential and 3 for business. That's the maximum that you can be have an increase on. So, well, what's unique about that though? It's also they had a constitutional convention, as it were, in a sense, and they changed the Indiana Constitution to roll that in. So it's permanent. I mean, to undo something like that would take a huge amount of effort. It's almost unforeseeable. So when you move to Indiana, you know what you're getting. And that foreseeability and certainty is very, very important to business.
The line between Illinois and Indiana is obviously invisible. It's not a real thing. But for some reason, it feels further away when you say, I live in Northwest Indiana, as opposed to Schaumburg. But if you are to travel and commute between Schaumburg and Chicago and Whiting or Crown Point, or so, Crown Point's a little bit further away from there, but some of the areas in Northwest Indiana, it's really not. So how do you kind of break down that stigma and, like you say, show that Northwest Indiana is simply, I don't want to say it's a suburb, but it is very, it can have that suburban feel to Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to call us the newest suburb, or the last developing suburb. So it's all full of opportunity, but we're truly a suburb of Chicago. There's always the borders constitute some kind of a psychological thing with folks, and you've seen that with New York and New Jersey, but that's a great example of where that becomes minimal over the years. You know, it's just people learning and feeling that there's not a whole lot of difference, or experiencing how close we are. And I really feel like there's been a lot of change in that area recently.
Bill, I want to put you on the spot. Can you actually put on your headphones? Our news guy, I don't know if you can see him there, has a question for you. So I never fielded a question from the newsroom, but can you hear things now, Bill?
Yes, I can.
All right, let's go to Ryan. Right,
fantastic. So I went to Valparaiso University. I'm pretty familiar with going back and forth between the suburbs of Chicago and the Valpo area. First of all, Valpo is completely different than it was even 10 years ago. There are a lot more breweries and restaurants and fine dining and stuff like that. The one issue that I've seen crop up, though, of late, first of all, Indiana was always cheaper gas. That's where you'd fill up before you came back. And it sounds like now there's a 10% increase per gallon, per tax. Have you guys noticed any impact of that? And the second thing is, as our traffic reporters frequently say, you know, the traffic right now kind of on that route, whether it be the Indiana Toll Road or what have you, it really gets tied up. Is there any kind of plan to kind of loosen that up, especially with the truck traffic? If you're trying to get people from Valpo and Chesterton into Chicago, you know, the truck traffic really does kind of slow everyone down.
Yeah, great question. And it feeds right into what significantly happened in this General Assembly with the passing of a historic road bill to rebuild Indiana's infrastructure in that way. We feel that we're the crossroads of America and we ought to have high quality infrastructure. So what's happening, though, right now, and by the way, go Crusaders. I'm a proud graduate of the City Law School.
But. And you just won me over. You don't have to answer anything.
And
else,
was
though.
The city manager of Valparaiso for 3 years, which was voted the best city in Indiana.
Yeah, it's a beautiful place, but the traffic is an issue. So right now, a lot of that is construction traffic. It's causing some of the truck traffic to be pushed off the Borman, the toll road, and others, and onto more local roads like US 30. There's plans for north-south arteries to be expanded or added to. There is a fund now for flyovers where rail is also an issue for us. It's very congested and at grade crossing problems occur. So we're moving forward with that. A lot of what you're seeing, though, is the construction aspect of things, jamming things up in the short term. It's frustrating for people now, but what they're going to get is, you know, some of the best infrastructure in the country when the projects are done.
And the gas tax?
Gas tax is part of that. So you know, it hasn't really affected us too much. You still have the differential between us and neighboring states. It's still, it's a cheaper purchase. And the big thing is, and we're all serious about this, and I know the governor is extremely serious about people seeing what those dollars were pledged for. So that he says that we want to smell asphalt right now, and we add concrete to that as well.
Well, if you're going to be paying out of your pocket, you want to be able to see it.
That's the thing. You know, so when you add something to government in terms of an expenditure or raising of a fee or a tax, it really, in our minds, needs to go towards something measurable and has a broader impact on growing your economy.
You want to smell that asphalt. So it's a reversal of the old childhood phrase. If you dealt it, meaning your taxes, you want to smelt it. I had to go there. I'm sorry, bro. Bill Handy, you're a serious man. You have many people in suits and ties, and I made a really bad joke. Bill, thanks for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Always proud to be here. Proud to be part of Chicago, and appreciate everything.
John Hansen in for Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. And I fill in for Steve from time to time, but I'm so excited for the first time to be chatting with regular guests of the program, Front Row Phyllis. Phyllis, how are you doing today?
I'm great, John. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful. And Phyllis, you come bearing gifts, which always is a wonderful thing. We're going to be giving away a pair of tickets to the Paul McCartney Show at the Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. And this is a sold-out show next Tuesday, right?
This is. It's a sold-out show. This is the first show, and then he's got a second one on Wednesday. And there's just not a lot of tickets available for that one. But this is, I have to tell you, this is not only it's Paul McCartney, but it's a different tour for him. So it's his one-on-one tour. And he's going to be performing over 37 songs that cover six decades of music, as well as 3 hours long at the young age of 75 years old, which is pretty amazing.
My parents have seen him a couple times, and they say he doesn't do a short set. He does the whole thing. So guess what? Don't pay for Wednesday. Go for free Tuesday to the sold-out show. Seventh caller right now, 312-981-7200. Bennett Wakenight will be giving away, through Front Row Phyllis, but Bennett will do answer the phone calls, be giving away a pair of tickets. Okay, so Front Row Phyllis, you covered Paul McCartney, which is an incredible show. Man, you got a long. You always are the one to go to for the long list of things to go. So at the United Center, starting tomorrow night, I believe, is Roger Waters, Us and Them, right?
Yeah, this is Us and Them. You know, if you've seen, he's done this a couple of times, but this is obviously based on Us and Them, the, you know, soundtrack from The Dark Side of the Moon. And, you know, in a recent interview, he actually said that he's going to combine everything from 75% Pink Floyd material as well as about 25% new material. And not only, if you've never seen these kind of shows, it's incredible music, but it's incredible light show. I mean, he puts on a spectacle of just a vision of what you want to see and hear. So it's really a great show.
That's awesome.
United Center.
Ravinia has always got the best places to go, or they are one of the best places to go all summer long. Tomorrow, Blondie and Garbage. That's a nice show.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
Yes.
And they are, once again, co-headlining on tour, and they are stopping here at Ravinia, and we're pretty excited. Blondie actually has new material out that released their new album in May, making it their 11th album. And they said, just pack up the, you know, pack up a bag of fun, because that's what the night's going to be about. So that should be a great time. And Garbage actually released their latest album last year. So they're going to be sharing some of their new music as well.
I've listened to the program when you've been on before, and you love to talk about the festivals that we can do out and about in Chicago, and that's one of the best parts about living in Chicago. And we go to the North Side this weekend for on Sheffield for the music festival and Garden Walk.
Yeah, this is the big one. This is 49th year, which is hard to believe.
Wow.
And it is, of course, the annual Sheffield Music Festival and Garden Walk. It's all weekend, and they call this one of summer's best festivals. There's going to be two stages of live music, self-guided tours of 80 different gardens, guided architectural tours, as well as a kids activity area. And the garden walk runs from noon to 5:30 on Saturday and Sunday.
Wow. So I know the Kane County Fair is going on as well. We'll get to that in a second if we have time. But I really want to hit on the Luzia show, the Cirque du Soleil show at the Big Top just outside United Center. And the reason why, Phyllis, I got to see for a dress rehearsal yesterday, do something for the TV station I work for WCIU. And I just saw one act, this guy in the ropes over water. It looks incredible.
Right, right. It's amazing. Well, you know, this one, what's so great is it's a walking dream of Mexico. That's what they're calling it. So the show is a poetic and acrobatic ode to the rich and vibrant, you know, culture of Mexico. And they say that, you know, like a walking dream, Lucia takes you to an imaginary Mexico where light quenches the spirit and rain soothes the soul. So I'm just going to leave it at that. And plus, it is a Cirque du Soleil show, so it's going to be amazing.
It's always incredible what they do. Front Row Phyllis, I wish we had more time to talk. There's always so much going on in Chicago. And guess what? Thanks to Front Row Phyllis, Aaron G. from Chicago has won the pair of Paul McCartney tickets for next week. And way to go, Front Row Phyllis. You've made his day.
That is so fantastic. And we do want to thank our friends over at Gold Coast Tickets for giving us the complimentary tickets as well.
You can follow Phyllis on at Front Row Phyllis on Twitter. And Phyllis, so good to talk with you. Thanks for joining me.
You too. Thank you.